Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. I'm Matterall.
I'm Carneros.
I'm Dunk Dinkle.
And I'm Elise.
Welcome, guys.
Did you make it last night to the LA meetup by chance? I wanted to go. I thought it would be great. Great fun.
I almost did. And I almost drug. Is that a word? Not drugged.
Dragged.
Not drugged. Dragged. Gobbins out of bed to Pasadena, where it is. But Pasadena is actually like an hour from where I live in LA. So it would have been a thing. And Wind Spirits was going to show up too. And it just didn't come together.
They were just talking about that other thing for next weekend, though, the Guildhall in Burbank. That place looks hip as hell. And it might be a little bit more convenient for me. See if you can fit it in.
Yeah, I'll talk to Spencer, who owns the bar. It's literally a video gaming bar with Twitch screens up everywhere. And you can put any game you want up. They'll put it up for you. And you can play games there, do Dungeons & Dragons, whatever you want to do. It's all about kind of gaming culture. So maybe next weekend.
I've never seen anything like it, but it's a sports bar, but for video games. So it has the same vibe. You have like food, you have drinks, and you have a bunch of TV panels, and they're all video games. It's really wild.
Well, let's go do something hip. Check it out.
Sounds good. Congratulations to Carneros for speaking at EVE Uni. How'd that go?
Thank you. Oh, that was fun. Yesterday was a 15th anniversary of EVE University celebration. And they were doing all kinds of things in at their different campuses and stuff. But at one point, they had a guest speaker slot. And I got on live on the public mumble. And they said, tell us the story of your EVE path and what happened to you and how you went from an EVE University student to an alliance leader. And tell us about your journey. It was great fun. And then we did a Q&A. I don't think they even recorded it.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake not to record it, unfortunately, for us, because now we can't listen to it, but it sounded like a great event.
Thank you.
I would have caught it live. I was just completely unable to, but I'm super sorry that it's not recorded, so I would love to have heard the whole 45 minutes.
It's hard on weekends. I missed a cap move up for it.
Move up? Do you want to talk about what Bastion's up to?
Sure, why not? We deployed to Fountain. So we got a little deployment going on just to shake off the rust. We've got a lot of rust. You live in Delve. It's like working in a donut store. You get a little bit chubby and lazy. So I got to, my apologies to all the people, hardworking donut makers out there who get 3 o'clock in the morning. I apologize. But it's like what I imagine working in a donut store is like. It feels like war is coming in EVE, and I don't want to show up out there in my sweatpants with an extra 30 pounds on me and trying to keep up with the fleet and falling behind. So no, we're all taking a little trip out to Fountain, and we're going to knock off some of the rust and get back in shape before the war. Wish me luck.
Good luck. All right, guys, let's tackle the news. What do we got out there?
I mean, so much stuff actually happened this week. Like, it started huge with CSB Guard announcing that he was leaving, and that's like out of game news. But then in game news, it seems like everything seemed to happen at once. I was worried that it was going to be just like a lull in the week, but we had Black Legion making some pretty aggressive moves. Leaving, or rather Origin, Elo's Corp of Black Legion, leaving Origin last night. Who knows where they're going to go? We have a pretty good idea. We have a player breaking like a 15-year-old record, which is absolutely insane.
What do you mean a 15-year-old record?
I mean, just circumnavigating all of EVE. No one's done that and not lost a ship in ever.
Yeah, the not lost the ship part is just, that's the thing I can't get my head around, that nobody caught this person ever in any kind of thing. That's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, we happen to have Katya with us and Thrice, both from Signal Cartel. We're going to bring them up in just a minute. So we're going to find out all about that, because it's, I don't know if it broke a record, but kind of set the record, because it was never done before.
I like to think that that I held the record for a little while of going just to random systems. It was never official, but I had gone to some systems. So Katya just broke the record by going to every system.
Yeah, all 7,800. All right, so we'll save that. But what else has gone on? Because it's just been crazy. We're doing now like 3 shows a week, 4 shows a week, and we're just barely keeping up now with the news cycle.
I think an interesting thing, you're seeing a lot more of these Alliance tournament ships being flown into combat and getting killed. And it's good to see people flying ships and not having them in the hangar. So that's neat. But there's only a few of them. They when they're gone, they're gone. So I think that's really interesting. You're seeing more and more of that happen. There's like evidently not Titan hunters as much now, but AT ship hunters in the way the old Wrecking Crew used to be for Titans.
So we've had like a Virtuoso, a Whiptail, and a Gold Magnate all die in the last like 2 weeks. And then before that, I think we lost an Imp. I'm not 100% sure on the Imp. I know we lost some Frigate. But it's insane. It's a lot of people that are just flying their blingy ships out.
I like your point, Dunk, that people used to hunt Titans, but they've become so commonplace that now, there was a time, I just interrupted myself, but there was a time when you would see a Titan kill make the news. One Titan was newsworthy. And now it seems like that's not the case anymore. But this is still the case if you kill an AT ship, which is worth many more times at a Titan these days, it's newsworthy.
Well, the addition of tethering for Titans makes a huge difference in their vulnerability. They're much safer to move. They're not completely safe, but definitely tethering has changed the game for that kind of, you know, hunting. But people with these AT ships, they're out there to get kills. We have intel stuff that we can see when people are using these kinds of ships, and they start to get into a pattern of killing things. And if you set up a trap right, you know, hey, you could get lucky.
And these guys are pretty good hunters. At least that's what I heard from Boat, although he was inaccurate in how he described their methods. But, okay, Color, or was no, it was Haiwantu that corrected him on the meta show. But these guys kind of specialize in this. This wasn't a freak accident where the Gold Magnet got caught, you know, by chance. It was actually baited out and killed.
Baited on a thorax, too. That's the worst feels. You're like, oh, I'm going to kill this cruiser in my frigate. Nope.
Wild. The Gold Magnet, yeah, is down to 2 in existence, down from like, I think down from 8. No. Can somebody clear that up?
I think down from 4 or 5.
5. But I don't understand that because because there have been 2 ceremonies where they've been handed out. And how many were handed out at the time?
I believe 4 came out for the first ceremony and 5 came out, 5 or 6 came out for the second ceremony. Because it goes to every member of the winning team of the Amar Championship. And there was an Amar Championship in 2003, and then there was one in 2016 that was actually held at FanFest. The members of both sides were out, like, on stage, like, competing.
You were an announcer there, I remember. It was very exciting.
It was very exciting until we had some technical difficulties because they CCB literally had to lug in, like, a server into the room. And stuff broke. So it was exciting for the first thing. And then we had to do some tech stuff for like 40 minutes. So this huge crowd that was in Harpa was like, oh, well, there's other stuff we want to go to. We didn't think this would take 3 hours. So peace. But it was very, very fun.
So a total of 8 or 9 or possibly 10?
Yeah, I'd say 10 is a pretty safe number for how many exist in the game. And that's how many have like ever existed. And I know we've lost a lot of them to people just not playing the game anymore. And I think one has died before, though this might have been the very first Gold Magnate. I kind of conflate it with the Impoc, which is the Imperial Apocalypse.
So these games were to pick the Emperor of the Empire, which was something that happened early on in EVE Online. 2003 would be the first year that EVE was on. And players got to fight for the different essentially candidates or houses of the Amar Empire. And the winner of that tournament, which was a player tournament, was able to influence the game. And so that's, partially, but then lore came into effect and overturned the result of the first games, right? Because the winner of the first game was, somebody who knows lore can probably help me out here, not Sarum, but Sarum was able to take power by the time the faction war started, which the Imperium Age, basically. And then they had it again in 2016. So again, returning to its roots, players were allowed to influence the direction of the Amar Empire. But I don't know, if you had 10 or 9, and I don't know, I think we've heard instances of 3 of them dying or 2 or 3 of them dying. Like, what happened to all the other ones?
I mean, you're just talking about ships that have been sitting in collectors' hangars for 15 years. Sometimes people just check out and they don't play EVE anymore. They grew out of it and kind of forget that, oh, 15 years ago, I had this unique ship in this weird space space game.
There's also some of the ships don't really suit themselves to be used in combat the way the frigates and like the Fiend, the heavy interdictor is. Like, what is it, the Raven State issue, which is there's only like 3 of them left. Taking a battleship and roaming around in it probably just isn't going to happen.
And they also haven't been balanced in a long time. For obvious reasons, because why would you spend dev time to balance a ship that literally only 2 people will fly? But so yeah, there's a like massive balancing issues because some of them are they were overpowered when they first came in, like the Tempest Tribal issue, but now they're kind of garbage compared to what we have. It's like a worse version of a Macariel. So for a lot of people, it's just like a cool little hanger ornament. But the Gold Magnate is actually has some chops as a PvP ship. It's actually quite strong, and it would be a dream to fly. And one of the neat things about it is it's got like a custom ship engine trail, which I don't think many people know. And it's kind of like a little rainbow that kind of goes behind it, which is super nifty. And it makes me wish I didn't lose the Amar Championships.
Well, whoever has a Gold Magnate, please fly it around and get some video of that trail so we can see it. And just let me know when you're going to do that so I'll make sure you're supported.
Nice. I don't think they were baited that easily, but good try.
Yeah, and just for clarification, this is the second Gold Magnate that's died. The first one, Maxine Antilles, who had won with his team in the latest Amar Championship, quit the game, and instead of giving his stuff away, he killed his own ship on his alt. So he popped out of the ship, hopped into it with an alt, and then killed it. So he could be the first one to kill a Gold Magnate.
You know, it's so short-sighted because when you do something like that to make your mark, there's always that asterisk. Yeah, he killed his own alt to do this. So anyway. Well, rare ships dying, very interesting, worth a lot, but really, Dunk made the best point here that besides the rainbow trail, that was awesome. But the best point for me is like, this is the new Titan is hunting these really rare ships that are worth more than Titans, which is, it's kind of an interesting evolution.
And I think we've also gotten to the point in EVE where losing a Titan isn't a big deal, right? So it used to be like an alliance-wide thing that you had to do, an alliance asset to have a Titan, right? You would have it to bridge, you would have it to maybe turn the tides of battle, but now it feels for a lot of Nullsecers that you can just get a Titan pretty easily if you just put your nose to the grindstone and crab really hard. But these ships, like, they'll never come back. You can't mine a Gold Magnate, you can't mine a Virtuoso.
Yes, if I could mine for an Etana, I would, but you can't.
Amen.
Yeah. Oh, did you say amen or hey, Matt?
Amen. I would have mined for Natana.
Let's move on, though. We have a lot to cover. Another thing that was really huge, we'll go over this quickly, is that the 64-bit client came out, and there was a test that about 800 people from EVE participated in. I believe that's one of the bigger tests that we've ever seen because people are very excited about a 64-bit client. There's a second part to this, and I want to make sure that people understand that the 64-bit client allows you as a player not to have your client shut down because your client can't handle it on your computer. That's a 64-bit client. There's a second part of this, which is the Aether Wars that are coming up, or Aether Wars, and that is more server technology. So there's a big test coming up in a few days, about a little under 2 weeks, that will be announced. Look out for that, because they want as many participants as they can get from EVE or maybe other games. And it behooves us to test that technology, to actually destroy their technology. So we want to get in there and get 10,000 players to overload this system and take it down. And the reason is they need to repair it. If they repair it, and if things go well and CCP sees that it's worthwhile, they may replace our current server system and architecture with this new thing that would allow many more players to fight without server problems. And so if you put those two things together, you have a better client and you have better servers that don't crash, you're going to see the nature of warfare change and the visualization of warfare change in EVE Online, both really big things.
One caution I would make, though, is one is testing technology or testing a build of the game, and one is just a tech demo. We've seen tech demos over the years. I remember one they showed at GDC years ago with one of the avatars walking across the stage in an outfit. And it was shared tech between World of Darkness MMO and EVE Online Incarna. And it was very cool to look at, but it never, you know, it's not in the game today. It was just a tech demo. This is a tech demo for a server tech. You'll see Amazon's new world is using a different kind of thing based on Amazon tech. Spatial OS from Improbable is another technology you see some third parties using. It's well packaged and well productized for where it is in its life cycle. CCP apparently looked at it and hasn't selected it yet, but they're kind of trying these guys out. You know, you could help influence their selection of which tech maybe by participating in this and showing what its strengths and weaknesses are. Hard to tell, but this is, please don't get your hopes up that the server capacity is suddenly going to expand like the client one is soon.
But you can get your hopes up over the 64-bit client, because that was actually pretty nifty, the test of it. Like, I thought that it wouldn't make a big difference at all. I was like, because I literally have no idea what that means. And so I was like, whatever, I'll give it a try. I know Matterall tried it on stream, but my computer was eating so much CPU I couldn't have the stream up, and I was running 5 EVE clients at the same time just to see if I could break it. And then obviously I broke it, but it wasn't even me that broke it. Luckily, so many people had showed up to the test that when I crashed, I was like, stupid 64-bit client, can't stop it from crashing. I noticed that literally everyone crashed because the entire Duality server crashed because too many people were testing, which was pretty neat to see. But other than that, I had my computer like full graphics, full everything. I was getting like 60 FPS with like 500 people shooting at a Keepstar and drones out. Like, test came with a little fleet of Nightmares and some supers and some Naglfars and caps and stuff. And, you know, there was some tie-dye, but apart from one of my clients taking up 10 gigs of RAM, it was pretty great.
Yeah. So I have a question for everybody here and the people in chat, and that's, like, with the 64-bit client, I've upgraded my RAM to 32 gigs of RAM, but would also upgrading the CPU or upgrading the video card have an impact on running, you know, like 5 or 6 clients simultaneously? Or is memory the main bottleneck, or CPU? It's unclear to me. Hey, we got plenty of room for the memory, but your CPU still can't handle all the calculations. So anyone can fill that in with what they think.
Or anyone in chat, if we don't know.
From what I understand for the 64-bit client, and I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to say it with authority anyways, the biggest bottleneck that it opens up is RAM, because that's what exists on the 32-bit client, right? So it maxes out at like 2 gigs of RAM, and then after that, your client will crash if it tries to use more than that. When it comes to CPU power and stuff like that, the GPU makes no difference in how many clients you can run. It's just how pretty those clients will be. But the CPU... EVE optimizes like multi-core CPUs in a pretty okay way. So you can, a really strong CPU will let you run a bunch of EVE clients, but just a normal CPU, if you want to use highly technical terms, will still run a good amount of EVE clients. So for the 64-bit client, and just talking to that, the bottleneck was RAM.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand, because right now when I'm running five or six clients, I have to basically keep everything minimized unless I'm actively in the client. Otherwise, it just gets such a contention for the resources. So I'm wondering if the 64-bit client's going to change that, or will still be that kind of thing, and you know how to best prepare for this kind of thing.
Well, we have some answers there in chat. Some people say didn't affect anything. Some people said it did. One guy ran 8 clients max with 32 gigs of RAM. So the wisdom I've heard is that you definitely are going to want RAM because if these clients were maxed out at 4 and now can go to 10, let's say, that's clearly a huge difference. If you're running multiple clients at high graphics, you'll probably need more RAM unless you're over 24 or whatever.
And CCB Antiquarian did mention in the latest EVE Pulse video that the amount of RAM that the client was using was a little bit out of the scope of what they wanted. So they're going to have to tweak that down a little bit because it was just using everything, everything it could grab. It used literally just went to 100% of how much RAM I had, and then it stopped. It was pretty great.
All right. Okay, some player news. Looks like Origin is moving out of Black Legion, which is very strange because usually Origin is Black Legion. But I think what's happening is they're moving into Fraternity for a temporary amount of time because I think there's just a lot of opportunity to have war because we know war is coming on the 22nd of this month. There is a non-aggression pact, a non-invasion pact as well that is going to be lifted, which will allow the two parties to fight. And those parties are Winter Coalition and Legacy Coalition. So I think Origin, having trouble organizing their own activity, says, why don't we just move into this area, move in with these people, and let them provide all the infrastructure for activity.
Yeah, this isn't the first time. If Fraternity is where, in fact, they go, which it probably is, this wouldn't be the first time that ELO takes a contract. ELO being the main FC and the leader of Origin, and usually the leader of Black Legion as well. This wouldn't be the first time that he takes a contract with a different alliance to FC in a certain time zone. He's done this with Russians before. He's FC'd like Russian fleets. But with the way SOV mechanics work, you can't really do it as an outsider too well, especially when it comes to defending SOV and defending timers. You're going to need to be actually in that alliance to do that. So this looks to be the first time in a long time, or I think maybe the first time that we've ever seen since the new Aegis mechanics, that someone gets hired to do a job and they actually have to change alliances because of it.
I bet he charges extra for that.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. But Fraternity, you know, they probably have a pretty deep pockets. ELO Knight and Origin have kind of always had a really good relationship with like Eastern alliances. So he's done this with Russian blocks before. Now it looks like it'll be with the Chinese alliance. So that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, that was the time where he was in Nelly Segunda. I was in there at the time too. And they came in and were out like the next week. It really was like this big, I think ProGod made a big deal of, hey, Origin now in Nelly Segunda. And then like a week later, they were gone. So I asked him, I think it was in front of you, Elise. I was on an alt, so you wouldn't have known. But I was like, what happened to Nulli? And he goes, culture clash. And that was how they kind of said, you know, it was a culture clash. But then I kept probing, saying like, what do you mean culture clash? What's that mean? And he's like, well, when we were on fleets, people were like, where's the war button? So I was like, oh, I get it. Origin is used to executing with everybody knowing exactly how to do it. And Nulli at the time still had some beginners and stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I think ELO is probably one of the better FCs when it comes to working with people of varying like PvP skill, right? So he can either operate with like a super high skill cap and get the best of the best. And he can also simultaneously work with people who don't necessarily PvP a lot. So it'll be interesting. I'd say he's probably one of the better FCs when it comes to it, at least the still remaining in the game.
Yeah. All right.
I do think there's an adaption curve to Elo Knight. If you haven't heard Elo speaking in comms, you have to turn your brain up like 400% to catch everything. So it's a very different experience, but he's a great FC. It's going to be really interesting when this stuff all kicks off.
I noticed people copying his style, which is kind of interesting to see his influence now ripple through other FCs, like NC's brother Bob has the same style now that Elo has. What is, you repeat the same thing like 10 times, and you repeat the next thing 10 times.
I think the repeating thing is a more traditional way that people used to do it a lot more that way, but the speed at which Elo operates is just, I haven't bumped into another FC who just operates and thinks as quickly as he does. It's really impressive when you hear it happening.
Yeah, Elise, do you have like a quick analysis on Elo's and why he's as lethal as he is?
So in EVE Online, the game is predicated on people being kind of cautious and wanting to know everything before they act. At least a lot of FCs are like that, or a lot of people starting out. Elo, on the other hand, is super aggressive and kind of it will take you by surprise. I mean, you're not necessarily prepared. So a lot of times FCs who aren't really into fighting, they're just really into getting the job done. They'll form a certain fleet comp that'll be very hard for an enemy to counter. They'll know what the enemy has. And they'll kind of just play to win the objective and not necessarily get the fight. And a lot of like those people or those types, there's, again, nothing wrong with it. They just get the objectives over and over again. When they come across someone like Elo, Elo will take a fight that should be on paper a losing fight. But because he takes a fight that you aren't really prepared for, he'll oftentimes come out with a victory, or he'll, you know, eat so much of the low hanging fruit that he'll lose the objective, but he'll still have a lot of fun, which in turn will drive momentum for the next fleet to get more and more people. So he'll get like a critical mass. That's essentially how Origin, his corp, operates, right? It can start with five people roaming in Munins. They might not win every objective in the world, but they'll have fun and they'll get a lot of kills. And those five people turn into 10 people. Those 10 people turn into 20 people. And then he'll be able to take objectives.
Yeah, they know they're going to get something, so they'll show up. You know, else is aggressive is Fraternity, apparently, is very aggressive. So this might work really well, this combination.
So the funny thing is Fraternity is super aggressive and the Russians are also super aggressive. And they make like completely they make decisions that a lot of like Western FCs wouldn't necessarily make, like pointlessly risky in some of our eyes. To make. So it's going to be a really, really entertaining if all the pieces line up perfectly and all three of these parties can just start going bananas on one another. I think that'll be really fun to watch.
No doubt. All right. We will actually be on hiatus because Talking in Station is coming to an end on a week from today.
No. We're not coming to an end. Our season is coming to an end.
What?
Back up.
I was trying to troll them, but okay. It was more, I was trying to be dramatic before I explained that we're going to be on hiatus using the same language as the Lance tournament. And we will return a few weeks later. We're taking a break so that all of us can rest and stuff. So all this will go down at that time. Doesn't mean that Talking in Stations won't be active. The Discord will be active for sure. And we may do live coverage if there are big fights and stuff like that. But yes, we will be ending our season one and starting our season two after that. Okay. So that's kind of the news. There's a lot of other things, right, that are out there. Is there anything else that we need to cover before we move on? Because I want to really get to this next section.
Oh, Initiative kind of dialed back their Hakkanen deployment a little bit. We're like, yo, let's keep jump clones here, and we got to do a few things back home and clean up that mess.
What caused that to happen?
I mean, I'm not entirely sure. I can wager a few guesses. But as we were saying before, there was a few fights that I think were really pointed, that Initiative weren't necessarily expecting to get the response that they got. So if they were fighting someone, I mentioned this before, when you're fighting an opponent, that's beneath you, kind of like what they're doing before, which isn't a slight to darkness or anything like that. But you know, Initiative generally are more skilled in PvP as an alliance. That's what they define themselves to be. When you're doing that, you can be really greedy and have some really good fights. When you're fighting someone that's of the same skill level as you with a massive territorial advantage at the same time, that's like dialing it up to 12, not even 11. So it takes there are a few growing pains. It takes a little while to get used to going back for it. And so I think there was just the first few fights didn't go their way. And it was a few things also happened where people took wormholes and started reinforcing their home space and entosising stuff. So it just became a lot to deal with. So they're like, yo, we weren't really properly prepared for this. Let's get everything properly prepared and then we'll go at it again. They're not doing what Test did, which is completely like abandon it. They're just saying, yo, for right now, we're going to go back, fix home, and then we'll come back with a little bit better plans on how to deal with it. It's like incredibly difficult to fight into an organized alliance on their home turf with a numerical advantage and a ship advantage and a territorial advantage. Like, it's really, really hard to make progress. Or do anything remotely fun. The most you can do is hope to get Rorquals and stuff, but you can do that through wormholes, so you don't even need to be deployed for that. I think EVE players are starting to realize that deployments, they don't work the same way they used to. And EVE, the whole meta of EVE when it comes to deployments, has caught up to make it like incredibly, incredibly difficult. I know PL took it on the chin really hard last year when some of our deployments weren't as fiery as they used to be, if I want to put it that way. And it's just because it's so difficult to fight into a mountain like that.
So it's definitely a home court advantage these days.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And you made an interesting point. I think you kind of explained it, but if I want to give you room to elaborate on deployments aren't what they used to be, if there's anything more to say there.
Oh, someone in chat is accusing this of being the pan-fan propaganda show. I don't mean it to be. You know, like, I'm being completely genuine as I can. I think, like, I will be the first to say that I think Initiative are probably the most fun alliance. That's not my own. Like, if I had to completely do anything. I also think they're the most impactful alliance of 2018. Like, that's without a doubt. I think they're super great, and I have tremendous respect for them. But in terms of deployments, what it used to be is you could deploy your alliance pretty easily with a variety of ships and also very quickly. And those two, the quickness and the variety, are like huge factors, right? So Initiative could deploy with a fleet of capitals over to Hakonin or somewhere in the north, even Pure Blind or Venal previously, and they could just move all the ships they need in one go or two goes. It'll take a one weekend and they'll be completely moved. And they'll have a capital armada there and a sub-capital armada, and people who need to catch up can just do it really fast. And if it doesn't work out, they can just move somewhere else the next week. Like, it's super easy. It would super easy to move. Now moving is a little bit more daunting. You don't necessarily want to take your entire capital fleet with you because of how fatigue works, even though it's a little bit more forgiving now than its initial incarnations. And so really the best form of roaming and stuff like that is doing what they do, is like being on the fringe of space to fight, and also you know, taking wormholes and catching targets of opportunity that way.
Yeah, very interesting. All right. If there is nothing else, oh, by the way, I wanted to say that the Initiative is actually from Fountain, and they deployed up north to the Tribute area, the border on Lone Trek and Tribute. And interestingly, they were raided by NCDOT through wormholes, and their SOV systems were kind of set back in progress. And so then it looks like Bastion is moving up. Are you moving up to save the Initiative, Bastion? Carneros?
No, this has been in planning. I'm not a fast planner. This has been in planning for months. This has more to do with just having fun with the the new trolls that live in Fountain Core. There's an NPC pocket in the middle of Fountain that has an old colony of Eastern European players who've been living there for, 12, 15 years, and are individually really skilled pilots. So they can put together a certain amount of forces. They've got a robust Rolodex, one might say. So they can bat phone for friends when they think of something cool to do, and they'll bring in Losek Nyasholopin and Darwinism, and sometimes they can bring in NC Dot and PanFam for things and make opportunities happen. So these guys are a lot of fun to work with. They're not uniform content across multiple time zones, but they represent some opportunities to do some new and different things. And we can bring smaller gangs and smaller fleets and have a different experience in EVE than just the same big Imperium fleets. And I believe it's really good practice for us to do stuff like that. I think that's weirdly, though, a little bit like what Init was trying to do with this deployment, which was take some groups up and fight underneath someone else's supercap umbrella with no supercap support and try to do things that are difficult as an underdog. And not just to give the line members the practice and the polish, but to give their FCs that as well. That's what I heard on the grapevine. It may be completely wrong, but that's a little bit like what I'm trying to do with my guys. But no, it has nothing to do with NC coming and going. And I don't generally know about their comings and goings in advance.
Got it. Well, you know, take credit for it. No,
I'm not the kind that takes
a great narrative. Bastion saves initiative. All right.
Dear Lord.
We can get Brisk to make a picture of it. He's pretty good at making pictures and propaganda pictures.
I've noticed those are artwork made by somebody else, edited by him by putting a little head on it. Is that right? Or does he draw the whole thing? Because if he draws the whole thing, those things are amazing.
I think he just seamlessly edits his face into things. And
his face.
Yeah, it's a little like a little homage to Eve things. So he has one picture where he's in a Mustang shooting through the front windshield, and the license plate of the Mustang is Wormholer, by the way, which just like cracks me up.
And he also does one where he's on a shark. I think those are funny. You can find those on Reddit. Maybe we'll post them with show notes. Also, there was a Charlie Chaplin meme that came out. That's just hilarious. Reminds you how funny Chaplin was. But okay, let's actually move on to the meat of this show, which is the unbelievable accomplishment of Katya Say. Let me first introduce the accomplishment that she traveled 7,800 systems, actually over 7,800 systems in 9 years, almost 10 years. The journey began in 2009 in December, and Empire was completed on July 4th, 2014. And NullSec was accomplished. That means flying to every system in NullSec in 2014. And I remember CCP actually brought some attention to this around that time. And I thought that was pretty amazing and pretty cool. But that wasn't enough. She went on to go into wormhole space, which is completely different than known space, where a map will help you navigate. In wormhole space, things shift. And I don't even know how you begin to track where you've been and stuff, but we'll find out about that. And that was completed just now, March 9th in 2019. And all this was documented very well. There's over 50,000 images of all the systems and the journey that happened. So we'll call it the 10-year journey. And I would like to welcome, I'm very excited to talk to Katya Say, who is here with us today. How are you doing, Katya?
Hey, thanks. I'm doing good. I'm kind of chuckling because I'm sitting here enjoying and listening to this show. And it's like, oh, wait, I'm here to actually talk.
Yeah, you're on. Well, we're just as excited to talk to you because taking on an accomplishment like that takes a certain willpower and vision to accomplish it. So well done. What gave you the idea to do it in the first place?
Oh, that's a good question. What got me started? And as a player, I've been with EVE Online since the beginning, since 2003. And it was the Dominion expansion that was coming along that caught my eye. The rebeautifying effort of EVE Online, of course, where they were going to upgrade the planetary graphics and the nebulas and all that stuff. And I thought, you know, I'd really like to go out there and see all that. And I know other players have done it in the past, where they've visited all the systems in known space. I said, you know, I think I'm going to do that myself, but I'm going to do it with a twist. And the twist was I was going to visit every planet in every system in known space and take a picture. So that's why the gallery is as big as it is. So it was that expansion that got me started on this path.
Did you start it and then say, yeah, I'm going to just keep going? Like you didn't set out to do it right away, did you?
My goal originally was phase. I kind of split it up into two phases initially. My first phase was, well, I'll do Empire space, right? High and low sec. I'll do all that and see how I feel. Then I was like, well, you know, I'm feeling pretty good and hadn't lost the ship at that point. And I thought, you know, I got to keep going. And so I started phase two, which was null sec. And then I finished known space.
That is one detail I forgot to mention. You did all this without losing a single ship.
That's correct. I did not start with that intention. I have multiple ships lined up, ready to go. I mean, I fully accepted the loss as soon as I undocked. And every time I got another system farther and not caught, I was just going, huh.
So let me ask a question about that, because that to me is the most completely impressive thing of this all. Is did you have to talk your way out at some points, or just no one was trying to catch you, or like what was that like to never be caught?
Hey, it's a very odd feeling, I'll tell you, because you know, I do, like everyone, I've got alts, and I have lost ships on alts flying carelessly and not paying attention, and in this scenario I really can't explain it. It's really odd. I went and tackled this differently than I would with my alts. And that was, I would do my research, my intel, know where I'm at, which is part of the reason why it took as long as it did. It slowed me down to do those kind of things, as well as taking all the pictures and everything. So a lot of it is all of the above of what you said. There were times that I talked my way out of it. There were times I escaped. It's just a lot of it was luck and just careful planning.
So I see someone in chat had mentioned
kudos
that
to you.
Yeah, someone had mentioned that, like, oh, you can just fit a travel scepter. It's easy. No, it's definitely not easy at all to go 10 years without losing a ship while going to every system in EVE Online and every wormhole as well. That's like absolutely nuts and such a cool accomplishment.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, there again, when I finished all of known space and I debated on doing wormhole space because I just knew that was going to be just the most difficult part of it all, right? Because like you said, it's changing and you don't know where you're going. You don't know what's on the other side of that hole. Advanced intel is impossible. And just not so many unknowns there. Again, I accepted, okay, I'm going to lose a ship. There's just no way. There's just no way I am going to lose a ship here. And miracle of all miracles, I just didn't.
Well, this is a good place to bring in Thrice, who's with us from Signal Cartel. How are you doing, Thrice?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Thanks for coming back. Had a great time when you were on last time listening to Signal Cartel and all that kind of great culture that you guys build. Katya is actually part of Signal Cartel. And when did you become aware of this was when it was in process?
Yeah, well, Katya's time in corporation actually predates mine. So when I joined the corp, one of the things that inspired me to sign up with Signal Cartel was what Katya was doing. I was aware of his blog and the posts that were going up there and thought that was an amazing thing that someone was trying to do in the huge universe of New Eden. So I knew about Katya's mission right from the very beginning of when I joined Signal Cartel.
Right. So how far along must you have been at that time, Katya, that when you joined Signal Cartel? Was that when you were starting the wormhole stuff?
No, actually, I was halfway around NullSec, I think, at that point, when Minxie had posted about this new exploration corporation. And I was actually putting feelers out at the time to kind of join up with a corp, some kind of a corp that, you know, just to socialize, because you get out there in NullSec and there's a lot of empty space and no one to talk to really, and it gets pretty lonely out there. So, you know, I think I kind of want to move into a corp and start a fishing, and that post went up, and so I joined immediately. I mean, the credo just spoke to the way that I have always flown in my travels, being neutral, respecting all play styles and all that. It just really harmonized with me, and I just joined up. But the kicker was, being out in NullSec and being in my own corp, I couldn't drop corp because I was the only player. So I had to make my way back to HiSec, get in the station, drop my corp so that I could join and then go back out to Null.
Did you know Minxie before? Had you ever met her before you joined Signal Cartel?
I have, actually. We both shared a time in Stay Frosty together. I did have an alt, a pirate alt in Stay Frosty for a little while. And we had a tournament, actually, one year. And Minxie was my first opponent. And I just knew I'm going to die. You know, here's the pirate queen, and here's me just a noob to PvP, and I'm just going to die. And what's hilarious is, you know, this is way before Signal Cartel. And what's hilarious is she came to the fight with a fireworks launcher. So I can officially claim that I was the first recipient of a Hugs fleet.
So for people that don't know, there's a couple things I want to cover just for some background. First of all, the Hug fleet is, Signal Cartel is not allowed to attack anyone or initiate an attack. Instead, they will lock you and shoot fireworks at you, and they consider it a Hug fleet because they're just kind of letting you know they're there and giving you a hug, basically. But the other thing I want to talk about, Thrice, is the credo. Can you tell us a little bit about the credo? And then maybe Katya can say, like, what is appealing about it?
Sure. Yeah, the credo is basically the kind of founding document behind Eve Scout and Signal Cartel. And it basically just gives our stance on how we approach our time in New Eden, both to the game itself and to everyone we run across while we're in the game. And basically, it just says we're a service corporation. And so everything we do goes to help us do our service work, which means we have to be strictly neutral all the time. So we don't ever initiate any aggression against other players, although we certainly do fight back. And we've had some fun kills this week that got reported from folks in our corp that other players thought they could probably get the better of, and they were in for a big surprise when they tried to do that. So we definitely do fight back, but we never initiate aggression. We just try to approach everything from the point of view of dignity and friendship for everyone that we run into in the game. And that allows us to have a little bit of trust in the community to do things like our Eve Scout Thera scanning service, where we provide info to the entire community on wormhole connections that are available in Thera, our rescue programs where we're rescuing stranded pilots in wormholes. All of those types of things require us to have, you know, when somebody sees an Eve Scout in space, they know that's a player I don't need to worry about. That's someone that's not going to bait me or scam me or do any of those other wonderful things that happen in New Eden. That's somebody that I can, you know, trust the info I'm getting from them. So that's kind of what the foundation of the credo is all about, to support those types of activities, which is what Signal Cartel is all about.
So, Katya, that spoke to you, you were saying?
Oh, it absolutely did. Just everything about it harmonized with me. I got a blog post somewhere where I talked about the key points to it that just I really related to, and how I've always flown and never once thought that there would be a corporation out there that would, you know, even come close to how I flew. So when I saw that, it was you know, match made in heaven, so to say.
And I really like the distinction between Signal Cartel and some other groups. It's not like, hey, I do all these really good things for the community. You shouldn't shoot me. And if you do, you feel bad. It's, hey, I'm not a threat. If you shoot me, I'll shoot back. But the whole thing is just, I'm not a threat. It's not like trying to lord over, like, hey, we'll stop doing these services if you shoot me. No, it's just, I'm not a threat. If you want to shoot me, but I'm just not a threat. So just go about your merry way if you want.
Yeah, we'll get comments. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I was going to just ask another question, but go ahead, please.
I was just going to respond to what Elise was saying, that, you know, we'll get comments sometimes from newer players in Signal Cartel criticizing another play style in the game. You know, ran into a code guy and we didn't like that, or ran into, you know, a goon and we didn't like that. And we always have to kind of gently correct, like, hey, those are all totally valid ways to play this game. And we got no problem with how anybody else decides to do stuff. And in fact, we like those groups because they keep us sharp. They help our new pilots to learn how to be safe and be smart in how they fly. So just wanted to reiterate what Elise said. That's exactly how we approach stuff. We don't expect any special treatment. And, it's wonderful when we get it, but we're going to keep doing what we do regardless of, what our pilots run into in space.
Gotcha. Toward the end, right? You're getting down to just a handful of wormhole systems left, and I know that Signal Cartel has an elaborate. I don't know which wormhole tracker they're using for all the chains and stuff like that. But what was it like when you got down to a handful of systems? And were you guys rage rolling for specific things, or what was those last few, half dozen of systems like?
This is actually an amazing part of the story. It was towards the end of 2017 that I was like looking at how far I've come along. And at that point, I was a little over 1,000 wormhole systems found on my own. So I still had like another 1,600 to go. And I knew I was going to need the help to get there, right? Because like you said, it's just going to get harder and harder, right? And so at that point, the beginning of 2018, I reached out to Minxie and started tossing around some ideas. I said, hey, I think I want to engage with the Corp in this huge event to help me find the last systems, and what can we do and what do we got? And now we've got so much more talent in the Corp than we did in the early days. I mean, we've got some amazing tools. I'm sure you've heard of Allison, which is our AI written by AD Parrott, one of our members in the Corp. And it's just an outstanding tool. And Allison,
so what does that do?
Allison does a lot for us. And Thrice, maybe I'll let you talk about Allison some, because she's just remarkable. And I think you know more about her than I do, honestly.
Sure. Just real quickly, Allison was created originally to help with our rescue programs. So when one of our pilots is in a wormhole system, Allison is an application that would run in a browser window outside of the game client, and she'll let you know when you're in a given wormhole system, if we have a cache there that needs tended. If we don't have a cache there, she'll alert you if you're in a system where we have an active rescue going on. So she was originally designed to help with that. And as part of what she does, she has to track our pilots in space. So we do have a really good record of chains in wormholes right inside Allison. So even if folks aren't mapping onto Tripwire or another tool like that, we still have a way to find routes into systems that we need to get into. So Allison played a key role in helping find these final 600 or so systems that Kati is talking about.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And we did do a show on Signal Cartel where this was explained really well. So I encourage you to look at talkinginstations.com and check that out. It's a great show. Yeah, amazing technology they've built for themselves.
Sorry to derail, but Kati, back to the last few systems. So you have all these tools, and what was that last week like for you?
It's a little more complicated than that, which is why we're talking about Allison a little bit, because the way we staged this was, at this point, I got down to like October of last year, and I was down to like the last 600 systems to get. And we decided that's when we're going to kick off the corporate event. And at this point, I still had not lost a ship. So it all of a sudden became critical that I not lose the ship at this point. I'm just too close. And so we managed to do a storyline event, and we won't get into the details of that, but I'll just say it's an amazing role play story that's ongoing for over a year in our corporate forums and stuff. And we incorporated this event into that storyline to where our pilots were looking for systems, but they didn't know why, and they didn't know what systems. And me and my team of mates, I had three people helping me, three scouts, Agassi and Captain Crinkle and Tamayo, big shout out to those guys. They would help secure the systems as our scouts found them. And I would come in behind them and get the system. So I actually had our corp working unknowingly, finding my last systems for me.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, that's combining so many different kinds of gameplay into one thing, making it fun for everyone. That's really impressive.
So what was the reaction after it was over and they understood what they were doing?
That's what happened yesterday. We purposefully selected the Drifter Wormhole Readout as the last system. We knew that would be easy to locate and get a fleet in and out of. Again, we told the fleet not what was going on, but just fit up hugs. We're going for a fleet operation to a Drifter system. And I think we had our largest fleet in Corp history of how many did we have, Thrice?
We had 74 pilots in the fleet, which isn't a lot to many corporations, but for a corp of explorers who are never gathered in the same place at the same time, to get 74 people all in one fleet was quite an accomplishment for us.
It was. So Theano was our FC, and she did a great job. She knew what was going on, but nobody else did, and other than the mates and some other key folks. But she took the fleet to Redoubt, brought him back to Seishio, which is Katia's home system, where it all started, you know, over 9 years ago. And then I revealed that, hey, the Great Hunt is what we called the event. It was a cover for what you were really doing. We're locating the final systems that I needed. And it was pretty wild. And, of course, we got a huge fireworks fleet. I think Razorin actually posted some pictures in the link section there from it and stuff, some amazing photos from it. It was really cool.
That's the link section of the Talking and Stations Discord. You should all join. It's a great place.
We'll put those in the show notes as well. So if you travel to talkingstations.com, you can find it on this episode. That is, those pictures were amazing. We saw them. Razorian's an amazing photographer in EVE Online. He's not just a photographer taking screenshots. He actually uses technology to enhance the screenshots and super saturate them and put a lot more atmosphere into them. So that was the big celebration where they all welcomed it. So how many, so it was like you finished this with a big audience.
Yeah, and let them in on what was really going on. A lot of them were shocked. Obviously, some of them, I think a couple of them had figured out kind of what was going on, but thank God they kept OPSEC and didn't share that information, because, you know, we know we've got corp spies in the corp and stuff, and the secondary goal is to keep me alive. Primary goal is to get all the systems, so.
Right. I mean, the stakes are so much higher when you're trying to do this without getting killed, and once it becomes knowledge, if it's public knowledge, then you're going to be hunted, so it's a good thing they kept all that quiet. I got to say, Minxie approached me with this episode maybe 2 months ago or 3 months ago. It was. I think we were going to do like a pre-celebration about this accomplishment that was happening. And then we thought, nope. That'll just put some pressure on the situation. So it was scrapped until after. And then you were going to do, you guys would be able to do like a, what do you call it? A victory lap with, you know, everything accomplished, and then all this could be revealed. But yeah, so it was definitely kept under wraps. I didn't realize so much so inside the corporation itself.
Yeah, even inside the corporation, it was pretty cool how it all played out.
The pilot in Corp who found the most of those last 600 systems, Mako, he found 32 of them. And his comment on our forums after the big reveal yesterday, he said, "I had no idea that what we were doing was somehow related to anything." And I'm really proud that we did some good work to help get something as unbelievable as this done. And then he says, I'd be used like this again in a heartbeat. Thank you to all involved for making it so entertaining. So that it was such a cool moment when Thayana, our FC, handed fleet comms over to Katia, and he came on and had everybody get quiet and then explained what this had all been about. I mean, there was just like, you know, gasps of amazement from everybody. And it was, you know, you had goosebumps in that moment to realize you were part of something that was over 9 years in the making. It was a really cool day yesterday, I got to say. It was a lot of fun.
I really like that.
I think it's,
you included
really,
them.
It's really way. Awesome.
Yeah. So
I think I got the thing, I'll just say this piece, matter if it's okay, but you know, so often we just talk about the numbers, right? We talk about the specs, we talk about the kill boards and all this kind of stuff and exact this stuff. But this is such a human moment of community that, you know, we talk about it, about how people come together in these games. But, you know, the emotion of that moment is something that people are going to remember for a very long time, much longer than a specific Kilma or stuff like that. So really kudos to everyone involved. I mean, that's what EVE should be about, is these kind of community moments.
Well, I got to ask, the pressures that were on you. One is to get this done. It was a long, long process. It took a lot of patience. Two is, at a certain point, you're like, I'm doing this. It's like pitching a no-hitter. I'm doing this without getting killed. So I got to not get killed now. Was there a third pressure of finishing it before the 10-year mark?
Not really. The pressure on me, the third pressure point, if you will, like you said, is honestly at the end of 2017, I was very close to burnout, and it's like I've got to get this done. And at that point, I said I want to get this done by the end of 2018. So only missed it by a few months. I'm cool with that. But yeah, the third pressure point really was just fighting burnout.
Oh, I can imagine. So now that you've done it, how are you going to track this? The tracker didn't start till after you started. So,
yeah, don't get me started on the tracker. I when that first came online, and it's like, hey, you just entered a new region and you've earned Explorer level 2. And I was like, yeah, tell me about it. You're getting turned off.
That must have been a little condescending from.
You know, I tried not to take it that way. I really didn't, but you know. And I was like, no, it's irking me too much. I got to turn this off. But I'm not going to go back and do it just to feel that. And contrary to popular belief, I don't consider myself a completionist at all, which is funny. But yeah, that had to be turned off.
Well, what are you going to do about that, though? Because it seems like you legitimately circumvented, not looks like, you circumvented EVE and even unknown space in EVE Online. They're really the only place you haven't explored is the place that's off limits to all players. It's 230 systems of Jove space. But how are you going to, like, besides your, what you've done very well is you've codified your accomplishment with this blog. What are you going to do to influence CCP to kind of, you know, put it on your tracker, basically?
You know, I have no expectations at all. I honestly didn't do it for anything like that. Did it as I'm an explorer at heart. I did it for the joy of seeing the new graphics upgrades that they're continuing to roll out. You know, even with the new suns lately and the new gates and stuff, and the 64-bit client just is looking too awesome. And I can't imagine how much more they can make this game even more eye candy, but it has definitely come a long way. And those were my reasons for doing it. Not honestly for any accolades or any, you know, attaboys or filling out a checkbox in a spreadsheet or something, you know. It was just for the thrill of doing it.
I got to also, just a quick question. When you're exploring space like that, you're staring at your ship a lot. I mean, that's like literally all you're doing all day. What ship did you take, and what did you, like, change ship skins up to keep it interesting, or did you just, like, keep it zoomed out and everything? Or, like, no, what would your favorite ship be, and did you ever swap skins in and out?
I did swap ships. I do want to point out there's some folks that think I did it in the same ship. I didn't. I did create Katia as a brand new character and skilled her up as I went along. So she started in a Condor, went to a Buzzard, and then ultimately to an Astero when those ships came out. But my favorite ship that I flew was through NullSec, and I did fly that ship all the way through NullSec, and that was a Tengu. And that has to be my favorite ship until the rebalance came along and that fit was no longer valid. But that was the most fun ship that I had.
That's because it can get away quickly and is immune to bubbles and stuff like that before other things were.
Exactly. It was the perfect ship for flying NullSec. And Jester from Jester Strek actually was the one I had reached out before I launched for NullSec. I said, hey, I'm looking for a fit that'll get me through NullSec. Here's what I have in mind. You know, this is what I'm trying to do. And he actually responded on his blog with the fit, and that was the fit that I used.
Great. So, close calls, did you have any moments that were tense?
Oh, plenty of those. I mean, NullSec especially. And those stories all sound the same. So I think as for a story, some of the most remarkable things that happened where I thought I would have trouble and didn't was like Imperium space, quite honestly. I was coming around the northeastern side of Eve and making my sail my way counterclockwise. And I knew I was coming up on Imperium space soon. And I thought, okay, here we go. I'm going to lose the ship, you know, and it's just going to happen. And I get in their space and I had a couple of one-on-one challenges at gates occasionally. Halfway through their space, someone in the local actually said, I'm beginning to believe you're really not a spy. I was like, okay, cool. And I completed it with no obstacles, no camp, no nothing, which just blew me away. So I don't know if they unofficially allowed me passage or what, because I just found that that's just not possible. I can make it through their space and not get, you know, pounced.
I would say don't believe everything you've heard about the Imperium. It's not a 24/7 massive school of piranhas in the Amazon River.
That's fair enough.
So I have to ask, geography wise, can you describe points of interest that you remember or favorite regions?
Wow, that's a good question. Offhand, I can't really say. In wormhole space, and I'm sure one of the questions will be, you know, what are you going to do next, right?
Yeah.
In wormhole space, I did start seeing a pattern of I would go long periods of time and hit systems I'd already hit before, just over and over and over again, different systems. I've already been here. And then I would go periods of time where I was finding new systems in sequence. And I started calling them clusters, because once I found one system that I had not found before, then sure enough, I was going to find at least two or three more. And then once I hit a system that I had found before, then sure enough, I was going to find two or three more that I had been to before. So I'm intrigued. I think there's some logic to the randomness or of the landscape in wormhole space somehow. I don't know how, but I'm going to see if I can figure that out.
And that's your next task?
Yeah, I think chill out for a little while. And then, of course, with our tools like Allison and the data that we capture from that, I can start really diving into some analytics of it. I've actually done some analytical work on known space connections and have proved that those truly are random to whatever they're connecting to. We've got someone else in Corp that's starting to look at the wandering connections to see if there's some kind of pattern there. So yeah, I think we'll start diving into the stats.
Did you also go through shattered wormholes? Were those part of this?
They were indeed. Drifters and the shatters and all of them.
Oh, you went through drifter holes?
Yep. Readout was the last one that we did. We went to those.
Yikes.
So for those of us that don't go into wormholes, what is the readout drifter wormhole? What does that mean?
I know. Where's Brisk when you need him?
Yeah, you know, I'm probably not a good one to answer that. I just know they're deadly with NPCs, especially at the entrance going into them. But they are easily accessible. You can go to a system in known space, and there will be a beacon on your overview if you have beacons turned on that will say unidentified wormholes, so you don't have to scan them down. You can easily warp to the beacon and then enter the hull at your leisure if you want. You know, drifters can be on the hull and they blap really hard.
Okay, so we have a question from the audience from Apolly on 210. And he asks, after looking at all of Eve, which literally you're the only person to do that, what is going to be your permanent home?
I've always considered Sashio as Katia's permanent home. From a roleplay perspective, she is of the Atura Stargazer ancestral line, which is their home is the third planet from the sun in the Sashio system. So that's what she calls home. Of course, her other home is her corp headquarters in Thera, and that's probably her secondary home. And then her third home would be our corp headquarters at Zuhan in Empire Space.
Yeah, cool. So the drone lands, are they as bleak as we hear?
They are indeed.
It's just quiet.
It was in drone lands that I had one of my interesting encounters, actually. And I could tell that, you know, they couldn't speak English. That it was pretty broken up. And it was like, why no kill board? And I was like,
oh, interesting.
Well, I hope I don't get killed today. And he's like, no, not on kill board. And I'm like, oh, he's trying to say, how come you can't find me on a kill board?
So well, hold on. Before you continue that story, Elise, can you explain why that's interesting? Like how they gather intel when some stranger is flying through a system?
I mean, I don't know if I have any additional insight in this, but a lot of people, they just like look up what this person's kill board history is. They just go to Zkill and type it in. And when I was looking up, when I first heard about the thing, I was looking up Katya's like kill board information, and it doesn't find you on Zkill. It's not like, oh, this person has no kills or no losses. It's just like error not found. So yeah. I can imagine that's not something that many people really see when they go out to Nullsec, because generally someone that's gone out to Nullsec before has at least died at some point in their Eve career.
So especially on a player that old, you know, I've never seen a Zkill empty for a player that age. It's amazing.
I'm sure you're like 60 systems deep into this Russian controlled area, and they're like, right. Hey, this is pretty sketchy. Are you like some sort of hacker or something?
It was funny. 15 minutes trying to explain to them I've never been caught. That's why I'm not on the kill board.
So it's like they're seeing a ghost, really.
Yeah, it was funny. I had another one that put a bounty on me saying, I want to know when you die. Okay.
And that's because if you put a bounty on someone, if they die, you're notified that person died. And so some of your bounty was taken from you because you put a hit on them.
Exactly.
And did you end up with a big bounty? Were a lot of people doing that, or is it just the one guy?
No, actually not. I forget where it's. He was the only one that ever did that, and no one else did. I think it was only. I can't look it up right now. It's not much, honestly. But mm-hmm. I was just kind of, okay.
Well, I think it's so interesting. It really talks about Eve Online and how the game works on different levels, and to see you go through a place and psychologically kind of be questioned because you don't fit, like you have no history. It's like you have no fingerprints and they're trying to figure out who you are.
Yeah, it was fun. I had a lot of good encounters out there, honestly. I think I had more positive than negative people wishing me well. And even after I would leave their area, I would get mail from them occasionally saying, hey, how you doing? How's it going? How's the journey coming along and stuff? It was really more encouraging than discouraging. But I did end up in some of those dead-end systems, and I wish I could remember their name. I'm frustrated that my browser is not cooperating with me to pull up some of this history. But I did get stuck at a dead-end system for a few days one time when they were camping the only gate out for almost continuously. But then they got a little lazy one day, and I got out. So,
oh, they bottled you in.
Yeah.
BTEC-R is a dead-end system, by the way.
Yeah, it wasn't that one, but it was one of those dead end ones to where there's only one way out. And yeah, they had me locked up for a few days.
When you went to the special systems that had things in it to see, like the graveyard in Bitekgar, or the original gate to New Eden, and some of these special systems. Did you make a point to go and stop and see that thing as you were going through the system?
Yeah, when I realized I was in some of those systems, I did. There were some that I missed and was kicking myself. You know, Mark 726's blog, Eve Travel, is a great resource for that stuff. And I didn't always keep it up and where I was at to keep up with those things. A lot of my attention and time was really spent on figuring out, you know, who's around me, what's in my area, what do I think I'm going to encounter in this place. So
what's interesting about this is you did this, you started this before interceptors were interdictor sphere nullified, right? Yeah. In other words, if you were in deep space, you were really at the mercy of gate camps and most things like that until you got into your Tengu, I suppose.
Right. Right. That's right.
What was like your biggest threat most of the time when you started this out?
Honestly, boredom. You know, but I used it as a stress reliever, quite honestly, because when I finished Known Space, you know, I got all the Reddit comments, you know, get a life, those kind of things, you know. But for me, and it's like I equate it to anyone, you know, what do you do to wind down after work, right? And for me, it was I go exploring, I go visit the systems. This is how I, you know, relieve stress and stuff. So for me, it wasn't a waste of time. It was a way to unwind for the day. And I just kept at it.
And I think that's what makes it so fascinating, because there are a lot of people who watch this show who are into like the NullSec politics, who are into PvP, and a lot of the guests we have on are like PvP focused because a lot of the stories are battle related. But then when you get to an accomplishment like this, where essentially you're just an explorer pacifist that has hit this huge milestone. And in your group, you must be like a rock star, but it's still, the cool thing is that the interesting part to the story beside your accomplishment is how interested people are in the accomplishment. People who wouldn't normally play the game, in an exploratory fashion, they still have an appreciation for it, which I think is very Eve-like, in terms of how the players kind of are having their minds open to this new, subsection of the game where they necessarily wouldn't necessarily go for it, but they can appreciate the grandeur of it. And the fact that you haven't died is probably the most shocking part to a lot of them.
I couldn't agree more. It's Eve very much is a dichotomy. In game, it's very cutthroat. You got to watch your back. You can't trust anybody. Outside of game, when you pull something off like this, it's just nothing but, you know, good job, great job, and things like that. I mean, it really is an interesting community that one hand it's just almost evil, you know, and the other hand it's they really lift, you know, players really lift each other up when they need to, right?
Well, I think the reason that we all can say good job is because we recognize how hard it is. You're not only surviving through hostile areas, but you're also surviving the boredom. And the commitment to do it. I think we're all kind of NullSec, HiSec, wormholers in awe of the persistence it takes to accomplish something like this.
Yep.
But I got to ask, did you use autopilot?
Oh, no.
No?
No, actually, there was a map book you used to get on Amazon of the systems, you know, and I actually got that, and I would plan my route out on paper, really. I didn't use any of the tools in-game, autopilot, autorouter, any of that. I kind of tried to figure out on my own what would be the best way to tackle this region, and I did it region by region, so that's how I went about that.
And you didn't use the Dunk's going to show us the maps. You didn't use like autopilot to optimize your path, that you just do that manually kind of thing? Or
right, I just did that manually because I knew I wanted to be sure to hit every high sec and low sec system, you know, when I was an Empire. And so I would just take a region and I would figure out, okay, if I enter this region at this point, then how can I work my way through these particular constellations within this region and then come out from there into the next region, and just kind of worked my way from region to region in that manner.
Did you ever miss a spot and have to go back?
Oh yeah. And that's a kicker too. You know, when you realize you missed one, and I like any true blue Eve player, right? I had a Excel spreadsheet to keep track of all this stuff in. You can't be Eve unless you use spreadsheets, right?
Well, you have to use computers. Yeah.
Spreadsheets is life.
That's right.
Well, this is, again, an amazing accomplishment. Over 7,800 systems traveled with no losses. There's that asterisk has to, it really puts a point on what's already a major accomplishment. And to do it in less than 10 years of real life, you know, it takes some time. You obviously took breaks, right? Like you would finish a certain section and say, okay, I'm going to sit back and relax a bit and then take on.
I did. And the biggest break I had was a 2-year break in there. So truth be told, it was a 7-year effort. Real life circumstances during that time, I wasn't able to commit any time to any games or anything. But then I came back after that 2-year break and knocked it all out.
Did you ever think after a break, like, yeah, I don't think I want to continue? Is there that temptation?
After that 2-year break, and I even took it to the point that I took my blog down. You may have noticed you can't go all the way back to when I started. And I had backed up my blog and I took it down. And I didn't know if I'd be coming back or not. And when I decided to come back, I said, okay, I'm going to put this all back together. I tried to restore from back up my blog and it was corrupted. And I almost said, the heck with it.
Oh, yeah.
But I was like, no, I got to finish this. So I just started the blog over again.
Did you manage to put back the stuff that was in there before, or you just leave that on?
No, it was a total loss. Fortunately, I did have all the pictures and stuff that I had before. I didn't lose any of that. But the actual blog contents, yeah, I lost all the posts.
Oh, yeah, it's a real bummer. Well, you know, it's interesting because I kind of feel like Eve prepared you for that. In Eve, you get set back all the time. You can build up a fortune and have it taken away, or at least a big part of it, instantly. And then you have to decide, like, is this worth it? And a lot of people don't come back from that sort of a thing, but it looks like you did.
Yep, it was tough, but I somehow managed to tough through it. Sometimes I do wonder, why did I keep going? But
we're really glad you did.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And the other thing is, you took time out when you needed to for real life and stuff, so it wasn't like you neglected that. And it was, again, is a testimony to, like, the people who play EVE Online. I think it's bigger than you. You probably know that, but the accomplishment was by you. But it certainly resonates with players who play this virtual world to make a mark. And this is a hell of a mark.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And you're absolutely right. I realized here at the end that it was bigger than me, including, and I had to figure out a way how to get Signal Cartel involved because I knew it was bigger than me. And I wanted to make sure that my court mates were a part of it.
Yeah, it sounds like they're pretty happy you did too. Right, Thrice?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, biggest fleet we've ever had in the history of the Corp showed up to help out with this. We haven't really talked about the challenge coins, but part of the incentive to participate in all this, Katia had dreamt up these coins that were going to be as a physical memento of this epic achievement that are going to go out in the upcoming weeks to everyone who participated and helped over the last few months. And so anyway, yeah, this was one of the highlights in Corp history, I think, for everybody involved right now.
So people that participated or helped out got a coin?
Yeah, the coins that you're seeing there on screen right now, those are, it's a, you know, like the oversized 50-cent piece type coin patterned on the military challenge coins that go out. We're going to be sending those out to everybody that's willing to give us an address that participated in either the hunt for those final 600 systems or that was in that final fleet that occurred yesterday.
That's great. Yeah. You guys really know how to memorialize something.
it was one of those things that when I were early planning, I just knew I had to put something on the table to symbolize it, earn it. Challenge coin was the first thing that came to mind as something that had to be earned. And let me tell you, these folks earned these coins because they had to find at least 10 of the systems I needed to qualify for one coin. And if you found 20 systems, then you would get two coins. So they did earn these coins, there's no doubt.
And it's not an inexpensive thing to make those coins. It's a real commitment, and that's just such a good memorialization.
Yeah, kudos, Signal Cartel, for doing that right. Well, I guess you get some R&R now, right, in your home system?
You get to yeah, relax. I don't think I'm ever in docking again.
Enjoy the trappings of a station. Hey, we do. That's why we're talking in stations.
Talking in stations. That's right. I just feel like I got this huge target on my back right now.
Oh, the first you person do. To put you on the kill board. Yeah. So what are you going to do? Are you going to retire
this
character?
Just donate you a gold magnet and you can fly that around.
You know what you can do? And I've thought of this. When you become somebody who is super famous, like Elise or Carneros or you, is sell your corpse.
Let me tell you, when we had our birthday fleet for Signal Cartel back in February, I think it was, I had my alt character in that fleet flying around, who's also on Signal Cartel. And one of the things they were doing is they were collecting corpses. I'm like, you guys are morbid.
Yeah, what are you, Blood Raiders?
It was nuts. We were in Thera, doing odd stuff around systems, shooting off fireworks and whatnot. And of course, you gather the attention of the locals and they want to pop you. So, and they did. They set about blowing us up and it was all good fun.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see what you get up to next. For now, you've put something under your belt that nobody else has. I hope that you guys petition CCP to put it all in the tracker and to make sure that it's there because you've circumnavigated EVE Online. We say you're the girl that flew around the world and threw it too. Keeping all over it.
Thanks. I appreciate it, guys. Really appreciate the opportunity to tell the story.
Yeah. Well, hopefully more information gets out so that this gets to more people. But hopefully people that watch the show will talk about this in times to come. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations. All right, guys, let's wrap up. We've been at it for an hour and a half, and I was wondering if we missed anything, or is there anything? Actually, we'll start with our guests, Katia and Thrice, if you guys have any last thoughts or hellos to people or whatever you need.
You got another half hour?
there's a lot of people to thank.
Oh, there's so many people behind the scenes, and I'm going to do blog posts to cover behind the scenes, you know, how we pulled this off and all the big thank yous and stuff. So I'll just say a huge, huge shout out to Signal Cartel, everyone that was involved in the Great Fleet. Wow. Thanks.
Shout out to CCP Guard. We're going to miss you, bro. Thank you to our supporters on Patreon and here on Talking Stations YouTube. Thank you very much, folks. And shout out to Minxie also. Hi, Minxie.
Minxie. By the way, Guard is leaving CCP. We mentioned at the beginning of the show. It's widely out there. Can you tell us a CCP Guard story if you have one, Carneros?
He's amazing. He's the same guy off camera and on camera. He has a great attitude running around the office on a normal day at work. If you got assigned a desk at CCP in the same office with Guard, you would have a good life. He's a great guy. He raises the tone of the office in the area where he works. He's fantastic. He's fun to see in the lunch lines, in the cafeteria, at work at CCP. He's great.
You know, there's a book called The Culture Code, and it talks about this group, this research group that sent out to business schools a guy to just be a spoiler, just to kind of do the things that makes a group become less productive. And they managed to bring these masters and business groups down to the level of kindergartners or less. They were less productive than kindergartners because it was just one guy being negative, either being tired all the time and sleepy or being a complainer or making jokes at other people's expense and being disruptive, managed to bring a whole group to a halt over and over and over again until this one group managed to overcome him. And they figured out it was really only one guy that had nullified the spoiler and managed to keep the group very productive. And what they said was it wasn't one thing. It was many different little acts that were done that counteracted all the negativity that people were putting out. And that's how I see CCP Guard as one of these people that does so many micro acts with the smiles and always including you, even if you're the sour one, and never speaking badly about anybody and keeping the positivity going in the face of a lot of complaining or a lot of fear. And that kind of energy keeps everybody involved, keeps everybody tied together. And that's really hard. It's very unique kind of people that are like that. And he's one of those people.
One more anecdote about Guard. He used to work, I don't know if he still does, but he used to work out after work at this hardcore gym down the road from us called Mjolnir, named after Thor's hammer. And he's a short man in real life, and much smaller than all the other Icelanders and foreigners working out in the gym. And it's a hardcore gym, and he would just go at it as hardcore as any of them.
Not to derail you, but Iceland is known for strongmen, right? Like they actually have a culture of really, really strong guys, not just in general, but like they compete in Olympics and stuff. Go ahead. Well,
there's that famous guy on Game of Thrones. I can't remember his name. They're not all like that. That man is an exception. It's not like Iceland is all 6'5" bodybuilders and then there's Guard. No, but he does... You know, he attacks it just like they do. It's crazy.
That's not CCP Guard. You got a picture of somebody up there. Is that the mountain from Game of...
Yes, that's the guy I was...
I didn't know he was Icelandic. Okay. That's hilarious.
I just want to real quick, my favorite CCP Guard story, at least recent times, the last FanFest, CCP did a thing called the CCP Games. CCP Games, and it was just completely outrageous. And in it, I was lucky enough to, fortunate enough to participate, and I got just plastered with pie and this like weird gunk stuff that they made the floor slippery with. And so, and he also did too. He just got completely destroyed. And right afterwards, we were like going to change and stuff. And he was just sitting there. There was no one around, no cameras or anything. He was like, I have no idea what we just did, but I think it might've been pretty great. And he was just like all smiles. Like he wasn't, it's just completely wholesome. And he's like that no matter what, cameras on, cameras off, as Carneros is saying, and as Manero was saying, just completely genuine, a fantastic person. And you don't really appreciate how important a community is in gaming until there's like a kind of a story like this story, like the Katya story. And it's so cool. And you know, all of the little bits that make that story so wonderful are in like at least some small part is something that CCP Guard is responsible for.
Oh, well, instead of using my time for shout outs, I want to complain about two important things. One,
okay, I'll try to count
price of the price of contaminated Lorentz fluid is way too high. And second, salvage drones have still not been allowed to evolve into the higher state of Tech 2, and we need Tech 2 salvage drones. So I just want to put that in there and let me sneak that in.
Okay. By the way, the I think Tuesday, you're going to be able to buy skills on demand without buying using the skill books. We didn't mention that at the top of the show. But also, skill books are going to change in price. Do you guys think that skill books are going to go up or go down or a mixture?
I hope they go up. I really hope they go up because they're set like 15 years on a lot of things. Like they're pegged for 15-year-old prices.
Yeah, I'd bet that they're going up. I mean, you have a discrepancy between, I think, and correct me wrong, people in chat, that carrier skill books are 500 mil and dreads are only 100 mil. So I would expect you're going to see inequities like that get ratcheted up besides a general overall.
If I'm not mistaken, I thought dreads were 90 million, not now, but they were, and titans were 5 billion, and now they're like 5.5 billion. Did something happen? Or have they always been these prices?
I think they've always... I remember there's like a weird disparity between the prices from when they were first introduced. And I never really could figure out why. My best guess was that back then carriers were a little bit cheaper to build. So they're like, oh, it's a cheaper ship. Here, the skill book's more expensive. And dreads were a little bit more expensive. So they're like, oh, but we'll counter that by making a cheaper skill.
Yeah, I think the Rorqual is not a billion. It is 500 million, same as a carrier, I believe. And I think the carriers are more because they actually are super carriers as well. So it's not just your normal carrier. But yeah, those are all going to get, you know, it might be a great time to speculate. It might be the worst time to speculate. Because if they, you know, if you buy up a bunch of Titan books because they're going to double in price, you're going to do great when you sell them, right? But they could also not go anywhere or drop. And then your money's tied up in these skill books.
So answering someone in chat, I was playing on Sissy this morning, and what it looks like, and do your own research, is that every NPC sold skill will be available to do the skill on demand, and the only ones that aren't eligible for it are ones that drop from rats, like the Triglavian stuff, some of the Explo stuff. That doesn't appear you can buy it, but I was surprised to see a lot of the more racially focused stuff, some of the capital specializations that you have to go to the regions to buy them from NPCs, they appear to be on CC skill on demand.
Not the faction books, though, right? Like the faction battleships and the faction capitals.
Or like the Triglavian ships aren't going to be there. But are the specialization skills there, like small
guns? Yeah, that's what I was like looking at. I was looking to see how I could make a huge profit because, you know, if you can go and, you know, get capital artillery specialization, which is only going to be in one racial region where the NPCs sell it and bring it around, which is what people do now, it appears that wherever you are, if you haven't injected it already, you'll be able to skill on demand that skill. It's not going to be locked to a region anymore where you get them.
Oh, that's so wild! Because I remember in the post they said that there's going to be it's for what they consider to be core skills. But that's pretty nifty.
Yeah, that's what it's game changer. What I thought.
Right, you'll be able to get them, but 30% markup. Go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going to say that for the people who traffic in skill books, there'll be an upper and a lower end to those things. So the possible profits are going to be very different than what people had been imagining.
Wild. Well, check that out. It's going to happen Tuesday. The skills on demand will happen Tuesday, but the adjustment to skill books, that may not happen until later. They're analyzing it now. Okay. So I want to thank everybody for showing up, especially Katya and Thrice. Thank you both for showing up and being patient.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And thanks for telling us your story. We'll celebrate that for a long time to come. And I want to thank Carneros, Elise, and Dunk for being here with us. So a few last things to say is... if you want to join us after the show, we pile into public and talk. So if you want to talk to these guys after every show, we jump into public voice on Talking in Stations Discord. And I want to say that we have a lot of stuff during the week that you won't hear on podcasts. There are a couple shows, 2-hour shows, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and those are only available on YouTube and Twitch. So you can check them out there. Okay, some great stuff coming up. again, we're going on hiatus after the next show, next Sunday show, which is the 17th. Then we're going to take a break, and we're going to give McLeod a break. Poor guy. Poor hamster. He runs so much. So we'll rest him, and then we will be back after that. So stick around. All right, everybody. Thanks for showing up today. That's all we have time for. We'll see you next week on Talking in Stations.